Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talking T20 with me, Daniel Norcross, joined, I am delighted to say, by the grand old Dave of Crick Info himself, David Hopps, back for more punishment. Great to have you aboard.
Yes, it's good fun. I've been warming up for this with a stroll down Hove seafront, so I feel ready for the fray. I don't know if you've had a nice morning.
No, I haven't, Hopsy, no. I've hot-footed it down because I'm doing the day-night game for you at the Oval, and so that you could have a nice lie-in and a little gentle jog along the seafront, I have been stuck on Southern Rail. A monopoly so wretched and so abysmal that it almost rivals East Midlands Rail for true dreadfulness.
I think or even Northern Rail, they're not very good,
are they? Are they not too good either? No, no. I do find that the tubes that are nationalised work terribly well, but then, you know, that's an altogether different matter, I suppose, and one for a different podcast, one that I'm very happy to host after my week's travails. Anyway, let us get straight on to the incredible news of this week. Finally, 14 games have been played by each of the 18 counties. The group stage is over, ladies and gentlemen. We know our 8 quarter-finalists. It was a frantic week in the Vitality T20 Blast. The South Group went right down to the wire. It went right down to the end of the last game. A last game which Middlesex so generously imploded in to allow Sussex to win, and as a result, Surrey to be kicked out of the competition by the narrowest of margins. Middlesex were 123-1 off 8.4 overs in their pursuit of 215-5, and they lost their last 9 wickets for 61 runs in 11 overs. Can you believe it? Everyone at Sussex was absolutely over the moon. Everyone at Surrey is plotting some kind of hideous revenge. Lords will be burned down, I tell you, as a crowd of nutters with pitchforks will march across Vauxhall Bridge and take down home of cricket.
Well, putting parochial London thoughts aside for a moment, the top four, we predicted this, didn't we? Did we get it exactly right?
No, I don't think you did. I think you had Birmingham, Derby.
Well, I had various various people at various stages.
You were right not to pick Leicestershire. I think you, although you got very keen on Leicestershire early. So let's be quite clear. In the North Group, the four of the 8 picks of Hopsy that did get through were Worcestershire, Durham, Lancashire and Nottinghamshire. So Worcestershire and Durham have got home ties. In the South Group, I think we all picked Sussex. Sussex got through by the skin of their teeth. I say skin of their teeth, though. They were massively disbenefited by having 4 games rained off. So, you know, they did pretty well to recover from what is a very competitive group where 18 points were required to make it through into the quarterfinals. Where the North Group, frankly, you only needed 16 points and a very low net run rate. But that's the North for you, I suppose. Everything's cheaper up there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the point. I think we can click to 2 things in the South Group. We predicted very confidently that Middlesex would be dreadful.
Yes,
indeed,
we did.
Indeed, they were. Sorry. And we had predicted from the outset that Sussex are going to win the Blast.
We did do that. I'm not sure that we necessarily thought that Somerset would finish top of the table. Kent had I think there were a few people's picks to come in the top four. They've made it through to a home quarterfinal. Somerset and Kent will have home quarterfinals. Sussex and Gloucestershire getting through. Pipping Surrey and Glamorgan. And it's rare that I feel sorry for Glamorgan, but I sort of did actually this season because they haven't got the strongest of squads. They managed to, they had depth. Everybody was contributing. It wasn't just Ingram. Tim van der Hoogten had a pretty good season with the ball and also assisted any flamboyant and florid commentator, especially if you want to clear your throat. Down the bottom, Essex were abysmal. I thought tactically atrocious. Only towards the end of the season do they start realising that Ashes Aidy can hit the ball out of the ground.
And we may come back later on somebody who is possibly the worst signing of the season. More on that later.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. And Hampshire, I think, a lot of people assumed that Hampshire were going to make it through their almost perennial finals day appearance. I don't know how you describe that. They're usually at finals day, Hampshire. This year, they were consistently dreadful. They rivaled Northants. Northants and Middlesex are the two worst teams in the country by some distance. A bit of a surprise that Northants had such a poor time of it. So just to clear up on that, Northants, Leicester, Derby, Birmingham and your beloved Yorkshire pipped at the post themselves in a, what turned out not to be the most thrilling match against Nottinghamshire. Had Yorkshire won that, it would have been them going through. Instead, Notts won. There'll be glee and delight. And some surprise, perhaps. We're going to talk a little bit about Yorkshire later on, because I think they feel like a county in, I wouldn't go so far as to say disarray, but certainly change is afoot up there. But let's start with Worcestershire. Let's start with Moeen Alley. Start with Worcester and Durham, because they've secured the home ties in the North Group. And I'm not sure that people predicted that. There are T20 specialists at Worcestershire, like Ross Whiteley. Really good all-round players like Ed Barnard. But Moeen Alley coming back in. This week he got an unbeaten 100. It's terrific news for them, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Moeen Alley, people have predicted for a couple of years that, oh, he'll go to Warwickshire eventually, play for Birmingham Bears. And it's lovely to see an England player come back to Worcestershire and be so obviously enthusiastic about leading the county and getting them into the quarterfinals. Of course, the only county who've never reached finals day. And if Moeen Alley can actually get them there for the first time, that would be a good story.
Now they're playing Gloucestershire on Saturday in their quarterfinal, a home tie. They're an awkward side, Gloucestershire, but you would on balance think that Worcestershire, in the form they're in at the moment, this is a great opportunity for them, isn't it?
I fancy Worcestershire very strongly. I think Kevin Sharp's done a great job since taking over from Stephen Rhodes in difficult circumstances as coach at the start of the season. And these young kids keep coming through. I mean, Dylan Pennington's had a better season than you would probably have forecast 6 weeks ago. And Ed Barnard keeps turning in decent performances with bat and ball. Joe Clark's making runs. Ferguson's had a stonking season. So Gloucestershire are a very shrewd side and they play to the utmost of their ability. But with the home tie, I do fancy Worcestershire.
To Durham next. They had no result this week against Derby. Had they got out of the park, they might actually have won that game and finished top of the group. They were only pipped to top spot by 0.039 on net run rate by Worcestershire. And I know we gazed into our crystal ball about 2 months ago, but I don't think any of us saw peeking out of that crystal ball that Durham would finish in the top two of the North Group. That is an enormous achievement, and one that will gladden the hearts of many who think that they've been pretty hard done by.
And they've done it, apart from Imran Tahir, who obviously had a great influence when he was there, they've done it without too many stars. They've not had too many newspaper headlines outside the North East. You haven't seen stories of 40 ball hundreds or nothing really to put them in the public eye, and yet there they are. They're second in North Group with a home tie, and they're now so confident. Of course, they've even been rebellious enough to sign Cam Bancroft for all formats next season. So
that's quite a move, isn't it, that one? Apart from anything else, you'd wonder if Bancroft might not be playing in the Ashes, which is a potential impediment.
I'd be surprised if Cameron Bancroft broke into the Australia side next summer. I could see Renshaw holding his place. So
squad, though, do you not think, as a backup opener? I mean,
that's the gamble, isn't it? I think the worst that can happen is Bancroft plays so well early season for Durham. He gets a pile of runs. They win some matches early doors, and then he's taken away from them, joins the Australia squad, and then they'll just be left in the position that most counties up and down the country are in, which is forever scrambling to find an overseas player who then changes his mind, or the board change their mind, and then after telling everybody of their loyalty and how they're going to stick around for 8 weeks, they only stick around for four. So Durham could find themselves in the same position everybody else is in. But if Bancroft only has an okay season, they've got him for 22 weeks, so he's a good signing, and why not? He's served his time. Let him enjoy his cricket. The one thing I would be concerned about is his technique up to playing on seeming pitches in difficult batting conditions that far north. He struggled at Gloucestershire, and
it'll be
a big test for him. Yeah, so let's see.
The rest of the North Group, Lancashire, I think their achievement is being underplayed a bit. Liam Livingstone has been injured there for quite some time, and He went off like a train for them, 288 runs at an average of 48 at a strike rate of 190.73. And yet, somehow, they've managed to paper over the cracks. So, well, they haven't even scrambled home, really. They're sort of comfortably qualified.
Well, they did more than paper over the cracks when they lost to Durham late in the group stages. I think they were washing the blood off the walls. I think that there was quite a dressing room up and downer, apparently, after they lost to Durham. Words were spoken, some very honest words, but they bounced back. And without Livingston in the side, their batting does look a little bit vulnerable. I think that's their worry going into the quarterfinal against Kent on Thursday. They do feel a little bit short of batting power, but people like Matt Parkinson have had a wonderful campaign. They bowled 50% of their overs with spin, which is the most of any county in the Blast, and this whole approach of relying on spin bowling has carried them through to the last day.
Just a quick word on their quarterfinal. He took to Twitter, as many people do these days, to complain that he'd got to make it all the way to Canterbury, poor thing, after a four-day game for the first T20 quarterfinal, and wondered who at the ECB schedules these things. Now, at some point, can players just stop whining about this? Because it isn't the worst privation. Somebody has to play the first T20 quarterfinal. Either there are going to be two on the same day, or you've got one each day to maximise your exposure. So, Graham Onion, someone can look at you and your lovely Shakespearean face and go, oh, isn't he lovely? Isn't lovely Graham Onion lovely? Because he's on the telly. And he's on the telly because Sky put four games on one day after the other. There, frankly, isn't the space in the schedule not to do it this way. And somebody, I'm afraid, gets the short straw.
And it's fair to say that Kent is not quite yet a lorry park, is it? So it is still just about possible to get to Canterbury within 24 hours.
Yeah, I think the game starts at 7 in the evening or something. I mean, you know, it's just the way of the world, I'm afraid, Graham. I'm getting that off my chest now since you took to Twitter. Not everything the ECB does is by any means perfect, but on this occasion I don't think it's fair to bag them. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, because Nottinghamshire strike me as a team who do this all too often. They blow hot and cold in the league stages. You wonder about them, and then once it gets down to the nitty-gritty, they feel to me, along with Sussex, oh, you're right, you just banged your knee. I mean, they feel, along with Sussex, strangely, to be the favourites of the competition of the eight teams that are left, but they finished fourth in the group. They've got such power. They've got great wise old heads like Stephen Mullaney. They've got the likes of Dan Christian. I mean, Dan Christian this year is striking at 175, 413 runs. And Alex Hale's just coming back, hitting unbeaten 70-odd this week. They strike me as a team that can come up on the rails. And Somerset have finished top of their group, and their reward for finishing top of the group is a quarter-final against Notts, which is not much of a reward, if truth be told.
Although I suspect Somerset will play with a little bit more verve and vigour in the quarter-final against Notts than Yorkshire did in the winner-takes-all tie at Headingley. I mean, that was a strange game.
Get this one off your chest, as well as a lack of cask ales.
I wouldn't say there was a defeatism in the Yorkshire performance, but there was a conservatism that was hard to understand. It was as if they never actually got that match going at any stage. It was a very, very curious game. They must have been 20, 30 runs light. Harry Gurney, they could barely get off the square. I mean, that was a wonderful spell. 1 for 15, I think, in four overs, which summed up his season. He's been very important in Notts regaining their form. But
I mean, David Willey got 51 in 40 balls in that game. I mean, well, that was a pitch a bit awkward. Have you got to give a bit of credit to Notts bowling? They have a decent bowling attack, in fairness to them. Was it just a little bit tricky?
David, I don't particularly think so. It wasn't the flattest pitch in the world. And to be fair to David Willey, his T20 batting stats have improved markedly in the last couple of years. His runs have been vital to Yorkshire. But yeah, I just think that Willey and Lythe were influenced by the fact you cannot trust this Yorkshire betting side. Once it gets below about number five, they've been chopping and changing. They didn't pick Harry Brook. And I think even an attacking player like David Willey was concerned by this and reined himself in too much, left far much to do at the back end, and then Yorkshire out strong enough from 6 to 11. But
Notts Wolves did. I mean, nearly 164 to win, 169 for two, finishing it off with a six.
It looked like a net, didn't it? Alex Hales, it just looked like a net session.
Well, it did. 71, unbeaten 71 off 56, and it was a walk in the park. It was a cakewalk, if you will. So, Notts went through comfortably. Have we seen the end of Liam Plunkett in a white rose shirt? Was that his last performance for Yorkshire? None for 26 in four overs. Is that how he'll be remembered?
I'm afraid it might be, and I don't think Yorkshire ever used Liam Plunkett properly as a devastating hitter in the last five overs. And it'd be no surprise if he went to Keir Oval and you suddenly found him coming in after 16 overs of T20 matches and planting the ball in the crowd. I don't think Yorkshire ever used that ability properly.
Well, absolutely. I mean, his batting ability, especially in domestic T20, is vastly underused, I think. Well, anyway, look, that is the North Group. Worcester, Durham, Lancashire, Notts through. A disappointed Yorkshire in a degree of disarray. You can have one line on the degree of disarray before we move to the South Group. Is it genuine, full-blown disarray? Or is this, and I think I asked this question last week, is this just the changing of the guard? Is this just what has to happen when you move from one team, the team that won the title 2 years running, then nearly won it that third year, and you come to realise that actually you need to have a clear act, you need to change things and you need to get new people in?
I think when you have a clear out, when you're in transition, you have to be very certain about what you're trying to achieve, who you're keeping and who you're not keeping. I don't think Yorkshire have been certain about that. It was unsure whether Tim Bresnan was staying or leaving. Stephen Patterson was widely predicted to leave. Then suddenly he's captain on a new 2 year contract. I think there's uncertainty in selection. Yorkshire are obsessed with the fact they must sign players who are available. So therefore that means you're signing players who are not going to play for England. So you're looking for a slightly lesser standard of player. There's talk about Wayne Madsen, who's now in his mid-30s. I've lots of respect for Wayne Madsen, but he'll be 35 next season. Mm. There's talk about Matthew Pillins from Surrey, again, a little bit of a fringe player, decent pro, but fringe player. And Josh Poison, who actually has come into a nice run of form in the last couple of weeks. But at the moment, is not the sort of player to get the pulses racing. So, if Yorkshire taught the game where, along with Surrey, they taught themselves as one of the two biggest counties in the country, these are not sort of big, ambitious signings you'd expect. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty about Yorkshire at the moment.
That was one of the longest sentences I've heard, but I'd expect nothing less from a Yorkshireman. Into the South Group! And, well, it was a tremendous week for Sussex County Cricket Club. At the start of the week, they were looking down the barrel. They needed to win all three games. They were due to play Glamorgan at home, Gloucestershire at home, and then, not at home, so Gloucestershire away, and then Middlesex in their last game, knowing that if they won the first two games against hapless Middlesex, they would, of course, be virtually home and hosed. It didn't turn out quite that way, as I may already have got off my chest earlier, with Middlesex's extraordinary collapse, which is certainly helped Sussex and destroyed Surrey's hopes. But before this run of matches, I was down here at the very beginning of this run of matches, actually, in fact, for a game between the Southern Vipers and the Surrey Stars, which was part of a double header with Sussex and Glamorgan, and I caught up just before that Sussex Glamorgan game with the man who has the highest average in English T20, the highest Englishman averaging in the Vitality T20 Blast this year, none other than the very great Surrey, Warwickshire and now Sussex player, Laurie Evans. So I'm joined by Laurie Evans, leading English averager in the Vitality T20 Blast as we start this final week of qualification, averaging 78.2 in what it must be said has been a bit of a misfiring Sussex batting lineup. But what I want to ask you about is playing for a team like Sussex, where there's such a lot of strength
in the bowling department. I mean, that must give you an awful lot of confidence. The likes of Jofra Archer, Chris Jordan, Tyrrell Mills. That's an incredible lineup you got there.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose our job as batsmen is to go and put a score on the board which we think is par or better than par. And you know, like you say, with a lineup like we've got, you know, we sort of feel that that's where our strength lies. We've also got a couple of decent spinners in there.
Yes, of course, mustn't forget that. Rashid Khan
and
yeah.
Danny Briggs. I think, you know, Danny Briggs has been one of the best spinners I've come across all year, having seen a lot of him. So yeah, I suppose from our point of view as batters, it's going out, assessing the wicket, what do we think is a winning score, let's try and get there. And you know, if we do happen to not get to where we would love to get to, the benefits of having such strength and depth in our bowling has meant that, you know, we haven't won games that we shouldn't have won, but we certainly have blown teams away when we needed to.
You've had a frustrating season now, is it? Am I right in saying 4 games have been rained off? And that does make a big difference. That means that you enter this week knowing that effectively you've got to win those last 3 games to get to finals. Well, not necessarily, who knows? We're permutations.
Yeah.
But that must have really, that, you know, it's, when you get so little cricket anyway, having 4 games that's wiped out is a real trouble. How do you keep morale going?
If I sort of sum it up, we came in, we shot out the blocks. We won our first 3 games. Then we went for the championship break and we came back and played Surrey here and we dropped Finch first ball and then we dropped him again and he went on to get 120. Now, and that was, you know, a sensational innings. We were always on the back foot. We lost that game. Then we had a couple of washouts and then you start to sort of lose a bit of that momentum that you feel like you've
had. And is that really important for you?
Yeah,
is that sort of the regularity of playing?
Absolutely. It's important for a few things is, you know, roles in teams, doing those roles well. So, you know, I found myself going up the order and really enjoying being up the order, facing more balls. And then you've got other people like, you know, Michael Burgess coming in the middle, David Visa coming in the middle. And then if those guys haven't then started to bat as much, they sort of lose, you know, like you say, and then the team, you know, you sort of lose a little bit of direction. So it is important in T20.
Tell us about Jofra Archer and Rashid Khan specifically, because those are two big names. Jofra, of course, could well be playing for England if they fast track his qualification. He looks like a very exciting cricketer from the outside. What's it like playing with him?
Yeah, he is a special talent. I've said that. You know, he's a once in a lifetime cricketer, I think.
Why? Because of
just the ease at which he performs at such a high level, but also the moments in which he decides this is a big moment in the game. I'll give you an example. Owen Morgan came out to bat last year and Brendan McCullum, and he got them out sort of the first couple of balls. You know, he just senses that this is a big moment in the game, and he'll bowl, you know, maybe an extra couple of yards quicker. He has that in himself. We saw in the winter, obviously, he can really get up to some high speeds. And here, it's a different story. He's playing week in, week out, almost sometimes 4 or 5 days a week. And he's, you know, it does take a toll on his body. So
he plays within himself to manage the workload.
He does. So, but you've seen in the winter what he can do at his very best if he's managed properly with, you know, some time off and stuff like that. So he's a young guy. He's enthusiastic. He always wants the ball. So it's brilliant for someone like Luke Wright and Ben Brown captaining. So he's just a special cricketer.
And Rashid Khan, I was here, saw the game you guys played against Gloucester. It's the first time I'd seen him live. What struck me was the pace at which he bowls. I mean, there's no way I could pick him. Absolutely no
there's
way.
There's no way I can pick him. And that, in the nets, I've faced him a few times. The only way I found of picking him is off the wicket. But he bowls it at such a pace, he actually gains pace off the wicket as well because of the amount of spin that's on the ball. He bowls a lot of top spin. And look, he's been brilliant. He's fitted in well. He's such a nice guy. He's obviously going to be an absolute. He's just going to keep going, isn't he? Superstar of the game. And I'm, you know, it's been great to have him. If we can, you know, use him as well as we can, you know, for the last few games, then that'd be great.
Well, Laurie, by the time we play this out, it'll have been determined whether or not Sussex have made it to the quarterfinals. So,
wishing two finishes.
Well, we could try that. But I don't think the listeners would believe us. So, look, thanks ever so much for joining us. All the very best of luck. You've got to play this week. Run me through it. Glamorgan at home, Gloucester away. Middlesex in your final game.
Yeah.
All the best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at finals day.
Cheers.
That was Laurie Evans on the eve of what turned out to be a 3-match winning streak for Sussex, or at least 3 matches this week that they won, all must-win games, and they did it. They got over the line. They absolutely thrashed Glamorgan in. It wasn't a thrilling match, but it was a thrilling atmosphere. Glamorgan were 49 without loss. Rashid Khan came in to bowl. I think it was the fifth over of the innings. His first ball was hit for one. Craig Mesher hit the next one down the throat of deep mid-wicket. And about 8 overs later, and no more than 38 runs later, Glamorgan were all out for 88. Finished off with a spectacular hat-trick by Timmel Mills. It was great, great stuff. And what are the chances of this happening? But none other than Bruce Talbot, the man who knows more than a thing or two about Sussex County Cricket Club, has just walked into our studio here. That is extraordinary. Bruce, well, since we've got you here, let's talk about Sussex, and let's talk a little bit about the women as well, whose KSL League campaign finished this week. First, on Sussex, a lot of people say, well, they were a bit lucky to get through. They were a bit unlucky to have 4 matches rained off, weren't they? I mean, they dominated at the start of the league season. They had a little bit of a blip in the middle, came back really strongly. That bowling attack that everyone predicted, they said was going to take Sussex all the way through. Jofra Archer, Timmel Mills, Rashid Khan, Danny Briggs.
Chris Jordan.
I mean, there you go. There's 5 of them. It was something else, wasn't it? And it was a spectacular night against Glamorgan.
It was, and it was a spectacular night against Middlesex, to be fair. That was a really good game. But, I mean, they won 3 games in a week to get through. The only thing is, you know, I think they'll beat Durham like you. I think they'll get to the finals. And it's all about momentum, blah, blah. But then, of course, it's another 3 weeks until finals day. So as soon as you get any momentum and in T20, then you play championship cricket for 3 weeks. Then you're expected to pick up the threads again on finals day. So,
and Phil Salt seems to be a man who could do with a little bit of momentum. He's started not so well, now really got some runs under his belt. And when he gets going, he bludgeons it. What I'm pleased to see, though, is the inclusion of Delray Rawlins, because I was quite surprised he didn't play more, and certainly in that game against Glamorgan he did what he does best, which is larrup the ball over deep mid-wicket. He's a very exciting young player. He's actually quite useful, I think. Flat left armour for a couple of overs of sort of
great
flat
fielder.
Darts, really like darts. Great fielder. A bit surprised that he hasn't been brought in more often. And the other thing before I let you answer, quite surprised we don't see more of Jofra Archer up the order, because if you've got a criticism of Sussex, it is their lack of explosiveness. And just in the same way that Yorkshire haven't used Liam Plunkett the way we might expect, not seen them use Jofra Archer so much. But when he did come in against Glamorgan, he was hitting it to all parts.
Yeah, I think there's a case for banging Archer as high as 6, to be honest, because like you say, he's an explosive. He can hit the ball in unexpected areas as well, which is horrible for the opposition captain to deal with. You talk about Phil Salt, who played a really good innings at Bristol, which I saw played a really good innings on Friday against Middlesex. And it's almost like watching Luke Wright 10 years ago. You know, he's going to make mistakes. He's going to, you know, hit the ball to a fielder or, you know, play a daft shot now and again. But the more experience he gets, the more he plays, the better he's going to be. I think he's a real prospect. And what has really surprised me about him is relatively well he's done in the championship this year, because Red Bull cricket before he played very little. But, yeah, he's one to watch, definitely.
We've got to talk about Rashid Khan. Laurie Evans spoke to us earlier about what an incredible bowler he is, as he did about Jofra Archer, reaching speeds up to 94, 95 miles an hour. But Rashid Khan, like a lot of Afghans, does everything really quickly.
Yeah.
He bowls really quickly. He scurries around the field really quickly. The pace he gets on the ball, together with the action he gets on the ball, makes him, for my mind, just the most incredibly difficult bowler to play against. He got 6 for 33 this week in 8 overs, and I don't think that actually flattered him.
No, it didn't. I mean, and the other thing about him is, I mean, for a 19-year-old, he's so composed and calm. He sets his own field. He doesn't have to be told, you know, he doesn't have to tell the captain to do this, that he's running around, pushing people, you know, in the field where they've got to be. Specifically, he'll move a fielder like a yard if he thinks it might get him a wicket, you know. Oh, it's been fantastic. I mean, everyone thought on Friday they were going to miss him Middlesex game. The other thing he does as well is he always takes a wicket in his first over. I'd have to look the stats up, but he's got a phenomenal record this season of getting a wicket straight away, always when Sussex, a lot of the time when Sussex need one as well.
Well, he turned the game against Glamorgan, didn't he? I mean, 186 was a gettable target. It was a good target on what has been a disappointingly slow wicket, and Laurie was talking to us about that. But Glamorgan had gone off like a train, 49 for none, with Ingram still to come. The moment Rashid Khan came into the attack, the entire tenor of that match changed. And that's what's so marvellous for Sussex. They've got game changers, haven't they? Timmel Mills, Jofra Archer, Chris Jordan to an extent, but, you know, Rashid Khan. Those three, those three are the ones that you think I can go to get a wicket.
Yeah, and the thing about Khan as well is that he's loved it here so much. I mean, next year on the open market, I'm sure there'll be many counties who could pay him a lot more than Sussex can, but I'm absolutely convinced he will be back at Sussex last year because he's embraced it. I mean, we've had 80 or 90 Afghanistani supporters, all the Afghan community, in the crowd. Yeah. It's been sensational. Yeah. And I think he'll be available if they get to finals day as well. And he could make, you know, he'll make the difference.
Well, this is turning into the Sussex podcast. Let's move off that because we've got you just for a couple of minutes. I want to discuss the KS, which this season ended in thrilling fashion. I was fortunate enough to be at the Oval to see the match between Surrey Stars and the Western Storm. Surrey needed to win their last two games to guarantee that they would get through. The Western Storm and Loughborough Lightning were battling it out to see who was going to finish top of the group. Now, top of the group matters in the KSL because if you win it, you go straight through to the final. Second and third are in a playoff on finals day here at Hove. In the end, Surrey were successful. A really big run chase for women's cricket, 159, and a thrilling, thrilling finish. Anya Shrubsole being hit for four off the anti-penultimate ball. Questions will be asked about the captaincy, I think, as much as anything else, of Western Storm, and to a degree Surrey Stars, as Anya Shrubsole was not bowling the penultimate over, Claire Nicholas was, and that may have seen a slightly different outcome, you never know, but one way or the other, it matters not. Riti Mandana, I'm sorry to say, will not be at finals day. She's got to go back to India. But generally speaking, this has been a terrific KSL this year, hasn't it? We've seen higher scores, decent crowds.
Decent pitches as well. That's made a difference, I think, in some of the games I've seen. And also the fact that it's 10 games instead of 5. So, for instance, Surrey, who've, you know, by their standard, I thought they'd get to finals day and probably win the group. They were bowled out for under 100 three times. But they, of the four games they played against Loughborough and Western Storm, they won three of them. So I think they're a very, very dangerous opponent on finals day.
Lizelle Lee looked as powerful as anybody. Susie Bates continues to marvel, but Lizelle Lee does look a fantastic prospect. The difference this year, I've tended to find, is that there are a lot of overseas batters and a lot more young English bowlers that we're starting to see. You've got one here, a quick bowler for the Southern Vipers, tall, quick bowler, Lauren Bell.
Lauren Bell,
who
bowled really well here against the Vipers last Tuesday.
Against the Stars.
Against the Stars.
I was really impressed with her. A tall, rangy, fast bowler. And I know Mark Robinson's on the lookout for them because Mark Robinson, the coach of the England set-up, is getting frustrated, I think, at the fact that slower bowlers dominate in women's cricket and wants to see a bit more pace injected. You've mentioned the pitches, that's a really important part of it. What's going to come next is some good young, a crop of fast bowlers. And we've got the likes of Kate Cross, but Lauren Bell really intrigued me. Freya Davis intrigued me day before yesterday at the Oval. Good change-ups, interesting slower balls, a bit of pace to her. There seem to be some girls coming through the system at last.
And I think, I mean, I spoke to Robbo about this very thing at Guildford a couple of weeks ago. If those bowlers come through and prove themselves, they will get an opportunity because, like you say, that is an area where you're right, England are probably lacking. If they could find two really quick seamers in the next couple of years, then there's no doubt that they would be given a chance.
I suppose, to just finish off on this, the big story is the collapse of the Southern Vipers.
Yeah.
Who have been at both finals days, won the first one, coached by Charlotte Edwards. this year just didn't happen for them.
Yeah, they've had a few injuries, to be fair. They've at various stages, Danny Wyatt, Tammy Beaumont, they lost Tash Farrant. They've had a lot of problems, but they've just not been consistent enough. On their day, when they beat Surrey at Guildford on the opening day, I thought, well, it'd take a very, very good side to stop them winning it. But just lack consistency. I think you talk about having an advantage of only playing one game on finals day. Western Storm played twice last year and obviously won the tournament. So I spoke to Nat Skiver about this, and she doesn't think it makes a great deal of difference. But
no, I mean, the only difference it makes is that you're in the final. That's the difference, you know. So
but maybe if you've played before and you've got used to the conditions and stuff, three good sides. I'd probably fancy Loughborough on finals day, but.
Well, just so everybody knows, Loughborough will be in that final. They will play either Surrey Stars or Western Storm. The match takes place, first match at 12 o'clock on Bank Holiday Monday, the 27th of August here at Hove. And the final at, I think, 4 o'clock. And so then we will know who are the winners of the third KSL. Bruce, thanks ever so much for joining us. I'm going to let you get back to the arduous duties of watching at the moment a 10th Wicket Partnership.
Do we have to pay him? He just wandered in. We don't have to pay him.
No, you'd have to pay him. Yeah. Oh, you tight-fisted Yorkshire bugger then.
That's okay.
You can get away with that. Now then, we've done Sussex. Somerset and Kent, they've got these home ties. They will be delighted. A lot of people will be quite surprised at Somerset, not so surprised at Kent, because they've got the likes of Joe Denley. And Joe Denley this year, he's got 396 runs, an average of 39.6, a strike rate of 146.67. He's done more than that, though. He's taken 19 wickets at 16.05. Only four bowlers in the Vitality T20 Blast have taken more than his 19 wickets. He's been spoken of by Ed Smith as one of the spinners that he was considering when they decided to bump for Adil Rashid. Can you believe it? And Kent, talk me through Kent, because they're having a great white ball season, aren't they? I mean, they've got to the final of the 50-over comp. They've now got a home draw against Lancashire on Thursday. There's things going well there, and they're not doing too bad in the county championship.
Well, they could easily go up from Division 2 in the championship. And also Joe Denley sat in as captain when Sam Billings was away at IPL, and Sam's come back. He's gone to a Royal London Cup final. He's in the quarter final of the Blast with a home tie. So Joe Denley's sort of set up the season very well for him, and we all know that Kent have got a great batting lineup, but they've also chosen probably the two shrewdest overseas signings of the summer. First of all, in the championship with Matt Henry, who took wickets for next to nothing. And then Adam Milne, who has bowled some super death overs. He's probably been the most effective fast bowler at the death in the Blast this season. So they've chosen absolutely brilliantly two Kiwi lads who've had great summers.
Somerset, now there's a side. They've got a lot of Lewis Gregory. I want to just dwell on Lewis Gregory, because in the county championship he gets the most fearful stick from quite a lot of his fans, truth be told. But actually, 261 runs he's got this season, an average of 43.5, a strike rate of 210, coming down the middle order. These are handy numbers. He's quite a player to have. There's a lot of that at Somerset, I find, that there aren't necessarily massive standout heavy run scorers, but there's a lot of people who seem to know what their job is. And they had that incredible run that took them through quite comfortably, notwithstanding, you know, this week didn't go too well for them. They were beaten in a high scoring game by Kent. But they do, don't they? I mean, they have strength in depth, and they have people who know what their roles are.
I have a funny feeling it may all come to naught against Nottinghamshire. So there's a prediction of a shock for Somerset on Sunday. But 6 weeks ago, Lewis Gregory was not the most popular man in Somerset. There was lots of talk he might go to Middlesex. Middlesex being the side that I don't know if we mentioned this, collapsed against Sussex and Surrey failed to qualify.
I think we touched
on that earlier. So Lewis Gregory decided to stay at Somerset. He's had a very good season and he's Mr. Popular again. And Somerset have surprised me a little bit, I must say. I didn't expect to see them topping the group with 20 points.
Finally, Gloucestershire. They're the fourth qualifier through. They're going to play against Worcestershire on Saturday. They're a side that has my favourite player in it. It's got Benny Howell in it. A great piece written earlier this season by Jared Kimber about him. He hasn't blown hot and cold as such. He has to do a very difficult job for Gloucestershire, so he's often bowling at very difficult times. But they do have my favourite little Ursine Bear, who wanders around the outfield, waddles his way around the outfield, if you will. Kieran Nima Barnett, he gets the most fearful stick, and it's totally unacceptable. I'm going to give you some stats here that prove that he's one of the most effective players in the Vitality T20 Blast. 198 runs at 28.29, a strike rate of 172.17, so basically 10 and over. And when he bowls, he's taken 6 for 180 in 21 overs at less than 9 and over. That is a man you want in your side. He's scoring faster than he concedes runs, and he's a cult hero, isn't he, Kieran Nima Barnett?
He is, and talking of cult heroes, you mentioned Jared Kimber as well. How's it going for him?
The St. Lucia Stars, yeah.
Are they going well?
Oh, well, when I last saw, they were bottom, I think.
Despite the data analysis?
Well, maybe they're not listening to him. I mean, do you listen to him?
No, but I don't employ him. You'd think maybe they'll listen to him eventually. If they stay at the bottom much longer. There was a wonderful picture, wasn't there, of David Warner?
Yes, I saw that.
Gazing over as Jared was giving him some data-led information.
He looked like he was working out how precisely to remove Jared's head from Jared's shoulders. That was the look that I saw in his eyes. I don't know if that chimed with you.
I'm not sure it is yet a professional relationship made in heaven.
I'm not sure of that either. Gloucestershire, though, just to finish up on them, they're another side with no standout megastars. I mean, they've bought wisely, haven't they? AJ Tye, Nima Barnett and Benny Howe, David Payne. These aren't colossal names, but they're clever bowlers, aren't they?
They are, and Ryan Higgins, of course, who's turned out to be a good signing, coming in around number 7 and a very dangerous customer. So, and well coached by Richard Dawson. So, a tidy side. It's been a good summer for the Southwest, both Somerset and Gloucestershire getting through.
Who knows? They may yet play each other on finals day. Right. We're going to wrap up now with some of our usual features. We're going to go to Leggy Watch first. And Rashid Khan, we've mentioned, 6 for 33 in his two matches that he's played this week. Very impressive. Matt Parkinson's got a 2 for 16 for Birmingham. Joe Denley picked up 3 wickets this week across 2 spells against Somerset and Essex for 64. Will Beer had to deputise for Rashid Khan, 2 for 29 in 3. And Josh Poyston picked up 3 wickets for Worcestershire. Will that be his last game for Worcester? When does he move to Yorkshire, I suppose?
For Birmingham, yeah. Josh Poyston is already at Yorkshire, playing in the Championship at the moment at Scarborough. He won't go back to Birmingham Bears because they've not qualified for the quarters. So he's now a Yorkshire cricketer. I think Will Beer, personally, I think that's the performance of the week. He'd only played a couple of games. He came in for his third game. He replaced Rashid Khan in a match Sussex had to win. That was a huge pressure evening for him.
And a high-scoring game as well. I mean, the ball was flying everywhere in that game.
And Will Beer and Danny Briggs, who again had a super last week. But Danny had played all season. Will hadn't. 2 for 29. Okay, off 3 overs, that's 10 and over. But as you say, a high scoring game. And to replace Rashid Khan, I thought good performance.
We're going to go through the week's humiliating bowling figures, and there have been quite a few, but I'm going to end with a very special one. James Fuller, 4 overs, no maidens, 1 for 53 for Middlesex against Essex. Matt Coles, 3 overs, no maidens, none for 47 for Essex against Middlesex in the same match. Tim Bresnan, 3 overs, none for 42 for Yorkshire against North. That's going to come back to those three bowlers a little later. Jerome Taylor, 3.2 overs, 2 for 52 for Somerset against Kent. No fun there. Mitch Claydon, 4 overs, 1 for 58 for Kent against Essex. No one's broken the 60-run barrier this week, I'm sorry to say. 58 was the most that was conceded. Aaron Thomason, though, managed to concede 53 in just 3 overs. Tim van der Hoogten, I'm now taking you up in strike rate, in scoring rate order, you'll notice. Tim van der Hoogten, 1 over, no maiden, none for 24. You would think, wouldn't you, that going at 24 and over would surely be the absolutely worst economy rate of anybody this week. 1 over, no maiden, none for 24. Doesn't seem too good, does it? But let me present as a witness for the prosecution, Gareth Wade. Now, Gareth Wade was playing his debut, as I understand it, for Northants, hapless Northants, against Leicestershire in a match that Northants did win, a rarity this season. Well, he's going at 54 runs and over. He didn't quite manage to bowl 6 balls. He didn't manage to bowl 3 balls. He didn't manage to bowl 2 balls. He managed to bowl 1 legitimate delivery,
which was only hit for 4. It could have been worse.
Well, he conceded 9, though, off the 1 ball overall. He has figures of 0.1 overs, no maidens, none for 9. And this was not, if you're thinking, oh, well, that must happen a lot to end the game. No, 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 no. He opened the bowling. 0.1 overs, no maidens, none for 9. Do you want to just talk us quickly through the story of what happened to poor old Gareth Wade on debut?
Yeah, the first ball went for 4, and then he followed it with 2 beamers, and was withdrawn from the attack. and that was his T20 blaster season over in about 2 minutes.
It could only have been worse if it was 0.0 overs, no maidens, none for 9, couldn't it? Really?
He stayed onto field and threw a few in, presumably.
Presumably. Now then, the accumulation at the end of the league stage of abysmal bowling stats. And I'm going to present you with 3 bowlers who've really stood out. They have been consistent, they have been diligent, and they have been urgent in pressing their claims to be the 3 most expensive and diabolical bowlers in the country. Which is cruel and vicious of me, but that's what we do on this programme. Let's start with Matt Coles of Essex, 22.5 overs, no maidens, 5 for 263. He's going at 11 and a bit and over quite a long period of time. That is purely consistent filth, and we applaud him.
Yeah, can we just...
Yeah, sure.
He was signed, wasn't he, as the final cog, the hard-hitting all-rounder, combative all-rounder who is going to take Essex from championship winners to also challengers in T20. He's been an appalling signing. He's had a dreadful season. I don't think anybody will ever discuss Matt Coles in England in the same breath again. But very, very disappointing season in all formats.
Personally, I think he's a useful batsman and should have been used more in that role. But I'm giving you hope, Matt. Next up, and I'm doing this really in most numbers of overs order because it's slightly better economy rate at around about 10.5 is Big Tim Bresnan, Brezzy lad, 29.5 overs, no maidens, 5 for 312. That is also consistently filthy. Not a lot of wickets thrown in there. It's a poor strike rate. I mean, he's taking a wicket every 6 overs, so every 1.5 games, basically, and going for 45 runs.
Yorkshire's overall problem, not just Tim Bresnan, was their strike rate was very, very poor, and that was one of the reasons that they failed to qualify. He of course, took a toweling by Matt Critchley. That lad, I think he called him on Twitter.
Yes, he did.
at Chesterfield, and he took a couple of towelings at the death during the course of the summer. I think his sort of underachievement was a problem for Yorkshire throughout that campaign.
Finally, and taking the plaudits for me because he's a Middlesex player. And he's been consistently... has he been unfortunate? Has he played on good wickets? Well, he's played on a lot of good wickets, if that's the case. He's taken quite a lot of wickets to compensate, but most of them in a best bowling analysis of 6 for 28. It's none other than James Fuller, 44.1 overs, no maidens, 15
for 478. Again, coming in at nearly 11 runs and over. Consistently 11 runs and over. Middlesex keep going too. He's their go-to filth bowler. He's played both 44.1 overs. I mean, that's some going. Now, and in mitigation, I would say that Middlesex have played on some pretty decent tracks. They came up against Surrey, who were on fire on a decent track at the Oval. Can we let him off?
And of course, they conceded more than 200 on a decent track against Sussex when their collapse meant that.
Oh yeah, they did do that, didn't
Surrey
they?
Yes. Failed to qualify for the quarters.
Yes, where Fuller conceded one for 53 in four overs this week. Thank you, James. Thank you.
not a good season, but I do fear that you're picking on him slightly because of the Surrey link to his performance.
He feels promising to me, and those 15 wickets hint at some usefulness. He bowls at the death. He bowls in the power play. I think there's a few mitigating factors for Fuller.
But again, he was signed as a one-day specialist. Doesn't play too much championship cricket, and you want a little bit more than that from your one-day specialist.
Briefly, because we'll go through the averages proper when we get to the end of the tournament. But at this interim stage, because there aren't many games left to go, are there now? Just 7 matches left in the Vitality T20 Blast. It's going to be hard to catch Aaron Finch. 589 runs at 147.25. The next nearest person to him would have been Ian Bell, but Birmingham Bears haven't got through to the quarterfinals. He ended up with 580 runs at 48.33, but Finch's average and a strike rate of 182.35 makes him the standout batsman of this summer, without a doubt. Surrey missed him when they didn't have him. They really did miss him in those first couple of games. And again, when he had to go back for a family bereavement. Sam Billings, I want to give a little shout out to. Often forgotten, sometimes people get irritated by a lack of achievement. Well, he's knocked in 335 runs. He's still got potentially 3 more games to play. Averages 55, strike rate of 152. Moeen Ali, now that he's playing, he's got a strike rate of 180 and an average of 50. Colin Ingram will finish with an average of 53 and a strike rate of 164. We've not talked enough about Surrey today, so I want to say a quick word about Ricky Clark. He continues to impress. George De Bell will be delighted. 235 runs, batting down the order, an average of 47, a strike rate of 176. And actually one of Surrey's better bowlers, having taken 16 wickets at 23 and an economy rate of 8.3. But he'll be taking no further part in this competition. Joe Denley, we've discussed already, a standout. 396 runs to go with 19 wickets. He's surely the all-rounder of this season. On the bowling front, Patrick Brown leads the list with 27 at an average of 13.26. No one predicted that at the start of the season.
I know absolutely nothing about him. It's nice.
We'll gloss over him.
It's nice to finish this podcast on an utter lack of knowledge.
And Nathan Rimmington is second on 22 wickets. There will be more wickets to fall. There will be more fun and frolics to be had. We will be back next week when we will discuss the quarterfinals. Let's get Hopsy's absolute nailed-on verdict for all 4 games. I just want one team. I want no equivocation. Kent v Lancs.
Thursday, Kent.
Durham v Sussex.
Sussex easily.
Worcester v Gloucester.
Worcestershire, no problem whatsoever.
Somerset v Notts.
Harry Gurney's Nottinghamshire will go through in that one.
So you're saying Kent, Sussex, Worcestershire, Notts for finals day. We will know. Well, we'll know by Monday. We might be a day later next week with the podcast because we're going to try and wrap up the Women's Kia Super League Finals Day, which takes place at Hove here next Monday, Bank Holiday Monday. But by then, we will know who's won the Kia Super League. We'll know who's at Finals Day. The season is nearly at an end. A last word, David Hopps?
And we may even know who you're going to be talking to, because at the moment we've no idea.
Oh, well, it could just be me, which I'm sure will delight all of our listeners. From me, Daniel Norcross, from David Hopps, thank you ever so much for listening, and join us again next week.